Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another, yes, another episode of Resounding Echo. Yes, hello again. Today's episode should be a relatively short affair, as apart from the music, I don't have much to talk about, which may come as blessed relief to some of our listeners, but we'll leave that to one side. So we'll crack on with the music. I have seven pieces of music for you today, and they are all united by the fact that they were all composed at the end of the first decade of the 20th century or at the very beginning of the second decade of the 20th century. So all of these pieces were composed in 1909, 1910, or 1911, if I'm not mistaken. And six of the seven pieces are also united in another sense, which is where the title for today's episode comes from, in that all of these pieces, six of the seven pieces, are composed by arguably the six greatest composers of the 20th century. So then you may be asking, some of you may be confused and asking yourselves, well, I thought this series, I thought what I write about or now what I speak about is supposed to be about the lesser known music of the 20th century. And that's true. But I have made the point before that much of the lesser-known music of the 20th century has been written by very well-known composers. There's a lot, I mean, the well-known music by well-known composers is relatively little, and all the greatest composers have many pieces in their catalogues, great pieces in their catalogues, which are not nearly as well-known as they should be, or compared to their far more often heard or spoken about pieces. And I think that's the case with six of the pieces I have here today. As I said, all written by very famous composers, but not very famous pieces. Or they may be pieces that get spoken about or get cited in texts and books, but they don't get listened to or played, and as far as I'm aware. Why that is the case? Well, I'll come to that later. Sometimes there's a justification or an explanation. Sometimes there isn't. For example, this piece. Now, that was part of the second movement, the second of two movements of the first string quartet by Alban Berg. Now, Alban Berg is rightly very famous, great composer of the 20th century or of any century. But that string quartet is, I don't think, famous at all. He wrote two string quartets. His second one is the famous Lyric Suite, which is a piece that is played quite a lot in public and on radio, and there are dozens of recordings. But that quartet is almost forgotten, as far as I can see. I've never heard it performed, never seen it programmed. I don't believe I've ever heard it on the radio. There are a few recordings, but not so many that I'm aware of anyway. Why? I have no idea, because it's a fantastic piece of music. It's only his third opus, written in 1910. It already demonstrates an extraordinary originality and just technical ability and just pure musical understanding. It was written, well, maybe we shouldn't be too surprised, because Berg's Opus 1, the first piece he ever composed, or first piece he ever published, was his extraordinary one-movement piano sonata, which is arguably the greatest Opus 1 in history. So the fact that already by his third opus, this string quartet is as good as it is, maybe shouldn't be such a surprise. But as I said, if you don't know it, please go and listen to it, because it's a wonderful piece of music. As is this next piece. Now, last week, with the centerpiece of last week's show was Das Buch der Hängenden Gärten, which were very aphoristic settings of poems by Stefan Georg, by Arnold Schönberg. And there we had another one, in the sense that was another poem. Well, the song was based on words, again written by Stefan Georg, but the composer on that occasion was not Arnold Schönberg. He was one, along with Alban Berg, of Schönberg's most famous pupils. That was a song called Eingang, written by or composed by Anton Webern in 1909. It's the first of his Opus 4, set of five songs, all settings of words of Stefan Georg, just like his Opus 3 set, also of five songs. But again, these songs, who plays these songs? Who listens to these songs? I don't know, because again, I've never heard them, never seen them. I know, I've no recollection of ever seeing any of these songs in a recital. As with the Alban Berg Quartet, I have absolutely no idea. But again, so Webern, yes, maybe he suffers more than anybody from being talked about and cited and mentioned. But do people listen to those songs? And if not, why not? It's just magical music. Now, as I said, I don't understand why that piece is not played as often as it deserves to be. With our next selection, there is some more justification. Thank you. Now, that was a fragment of Hetskvexa, a setting of words by Maurice Maeterlinck, a Belgian writer who was very much flavor of the month at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th. Many composers composed works based on his works, Belias und Melisande, most famously of all, probably, but many of his songs were set by many composers. Zemlinsky comes to mind. There's a host of them, Sibelius, Fauré. But this particular one is a poem, as I said, Hetskvexa, which usually in English is translated as Foliage of the Heart. A very short piece, written by Arnold Schoenberg, again. A short piece for extraordinary forces and extraordinarily unusual forces. It's a piece written for harmonium, harp, celeste, and what's called a coloratura soprano, which basically just means a soprano who's able to manipulate a greater range of notes than a typical soprano. And as you heard in that piece, some of the notes that the soprano is asked or required to sing are literally stratospheric. So the reason why this piece, as wonderful as it is, the main reason why this piece is not played as often as it could be or should be, is simply is that there are very few human beings alive who are able to sing this piece. It just asks for an exceptionally talented and dedicated and well-trained professional vocalist to sing it. To sing it correctly, and it's also why it's not what I've seen frequently. Well, it's why, yeah, it's, there are a few recordings, but but performances are very few and far between, and also this, that the combination of instruments is very, very unusual. So all of those factors combine to mean that Hetskvexa, unfortunately, is a piece that I will probably never, ever, ever hear in public. But thankfully, we have recordings like that. That one there particularly was sung by Christine Schaeffer, recorded on a Deutsche Grammophon CD, which is probably a lot older than I actually think it is. But anyway, as I said, and remember all the details, written details of anything played in these programs follows or will be found a week later on the same page. Okay, so from where are we going now? Well, yeah, let's see. Well, I talked about the stratosphere, so let's keep going in that direction. Now, that was a piece called, or again, I'm sorry, I would love to play the whole piece, but copyright reasons don't allow us to indulge in such extravagance. But that was a piece, a fragment of a piece called Zvevduliki by Igor Stravinsky. Again, is there any more famous composer of the 20th century? But again, Zvevduliki, which for some strange reason is usually translated as King of the Stars. I don't know why, because King is nowhere in the Russian. So I'll just call that piece Starface. It's a piece that requires, the reason why this piece is very rarely heard or performed is because it's a very short piece. In total, it's only 5 minutes usually, but it requires large instrumental and vocal forces. And so it's a complicated piece, the program, because it's very hard to choose, because it's obviously it's only a 5 minute piece. So it has to be, if you're going to program it, you have to program it with other pieces, but because of the forces needed to play it, it's very hard to decide, well, what else can we put on the program? And for that reason, it rarely gets performed live, which is a real pity, because it's an extraordinary piece. It's a piece written in those wonderfully experimental years in Stravinsky's career, which sadly, during the First World War, he basically, well, the First World War, maybe a little later, he more or less renounced when he went in his neoclassical direction, but that's also why Stravinsky was the composer he was, is because he never stood still. And very like Picasso in that sense, I think. He was always, he just always had to go in new directions. And I won't lie, I have my definite favorite periods in Stravinsky's output. And this piece is from, the start of that period. So there you go, Zvevdoliki by Igor Stravinsky. That's a little piano piece, a little sketch written by Béla Bartók, who is, with Bartók, I think now we have, probably the five greatest composers of the 20th century here today. But that piece is part of a series of, it's the middle of seven sketches. That's the fourth one and the longest one, and probably the most experimental of the lot. These pieces are very much like, just, they seem like throwaway pieces, just ideas that Bartók didn't develop much, but he just put, it's the most heterogeneous collection of pieces of this period. What was it, 2 weeks ago, I played his 14 bagatelles, which are in some ways more united than these seven sketches, but they're all from that period when Bartók was really just extraordinarily experimental. And it doesn't have a title, it just has a tempo marking, nothing else, just called a sketch. And from one sketch to another. Now, as I said, that all the pieces I've played so far were composed by extremely famous composers. That piece, which you've just heard, is the exception, because that's one. It's another sketch, like the Bartok piece, an esquisse. But it's one of a set of 12, written by a very unique, quite extraordinary Russian composer called Alexey Stanchinsky, who sadly died at a very, very, very young age, in his mid-20s. His death is still clouded in uncertainty. I don't like going too much into the biographies of any composers here. As I wrote before, I like to try to stick to the music. But it is tragic, because when you listen to a piece like that, or more generally the whole set, the full set of these 12 sketches, it's very clear that Stanchinsky was a very original composer, and had he have lived longer, God only knows what he would have done. But that's as may be. He didn't live longer. As I said, he died in 1914, and those pieces, those sketches, are dated 1911. And yeah, they're very, just very, 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 very evocative pieces, but also technically they are very experimental in many ways, maybe most in terms of a meter and rhythm. There are there are influences clearly, but there's also something unique going on there, and they are I'm not a pianist, but I have the impression that they are very, very, very difficult to pull off correctly. They are pieces that have always, since the first time I heard them, which is a long time ago now, probably almost 30 years ago. Actually, no, I remember exactly. It was in the summer of 1996 when I first heard those pieces. And actually, it was on the radio. But so it's a long time ago. But yeah, so please go and listen to the whole set, or anything you can, by Alexey Stanchinsky. And so that's all I have today. I'm just going to finish today with our coda for today. And that's the last of our famous composers for today, as that was the ending of the ending of the third and final movement of a piano trio composed by Charles Ives. Also, well, again, dating pieces of Charles Ives is extraordinarily difficult, because he constantly revised his pieces. And so it's never known. So the start date and the finish date can be decades apart. So this piece may have been started as far back as 1900, but it's usually given the final date as 1911. And that's all I have for today. As I said, it's a relatively brief program, but short in quantity. But I hope you will agree with me that certainly not in quality. So if you enjoyed anything there today, please come back again next week. Thank you for listening. And I hope to be back this time next week for some more resounding.